You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Brooklyn Nets came to Indianapolis on Monday night, a Kyrie-less team to take on the reeling Indiana Pacers. It was a close and hard-fought game where both teams maintained small leads through one, two, and three quarters. It was back and forth. Domantas Sabonis had 23 points, 11 assists, and 10 rebounds to notch his fourth triple-double of the season, and the fourth one really since mid-January. He was followed by TJ Warren's 19 points and Miles Turner's 15. Off the bench, Doug McDermott led the team with 13 points. For the Nets, the leader was Spencer Dinwiddie with 21 points, including 13 of 15 from the free throw line. He notched a double-double with 11 assists. He was followed by Joe Harris, who had 15 points. And off the bench, DeAndre Jordan and Garrett Temple led the team 11 apiece. But all of this was too much for the Pacers, with some late-game mistakes and a missed game winner by Malcolm Brogdon led to the Pacers losing their sixth game in a row, their sixth home game in a row as well. And they lose 106-105 to the Brooklyn Nets. Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful show. It's Mike here right now. I'm a little bit under the weather. This podcast is going up a little bit late, so I'm recording it at 8:30 Eastern on Tuesday morning. I watched the game last night, just was not feeling well, and I needed to sleep, so I decided to kind of just fall right asleep after the game, and hopefully I will. I feel a little better right now. But if you hear this tone, this is because I'm a little bit under the weather and a little bit congested. But overall, no fever, nothing like that. So I'm okay and good to go. On today's podcast, I'm going to walk through just the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Nets loss. I'm really going to do another thing I did last week with the Toronto game and go through just like the last 3 minutes and just the poor execution in that moment, and then I'm going to do a following segment to end the show where I just talk about what I think is wrong with this team. Like I said, to start the show, they've lost six in a row, including six at home, which is just pitiful. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. They've lost six at home. They should have lost seven at home. This team is just, they've been bad. I mean, if you go to the Blazers game, the end of their road trip, they're seven of the last eight. I mean, they're reeling. They're falling way, way out of even a chance at really the four seed right now. And sooner or later, they're going to end up, they are like 5.5-6 games up on the Nets, but sooner or later, that's going to come back if they can't figure out how to turn this around. Luckily, the All-Star break coming up, so that maybe will be a positive for them. We'll see about that. But first, a quick break, and let's do the good, the bad, and the elite from the Nets game. I think the first place to start is one of the weirdest things you'll see. So the Pacers outshot the Nets from the field by a healthy 9% almost. So the Pacers were 45-92. They made 10 more shots than the Nets, who were 35-87. But the Pacers got killed on the glass and got killed at the free throw line. They got beaten the three-point line for sure by five threes, and that will make a difference, especially that will help me hit up. But look at it, the Nets took 21 more free throws, including making 16 more, and they also had eight more offensive rebounds. This kind of issue continues to plague the Pacers for a myriad of reasons, but rebounding continues to be their main problem, because it's the second chance points leads to really the second chance 3-point shots, which leads to this huge kind of momentum flip, right? I don't know how many times you can talk about it where the Pacers just get screwed up because, you know, let's say they have a small lead, the guy missed the layup, they do a great job on that defensive play, but they screw up the rebound, the team gets back to three and takes the momentum away. When really, if they got the rebound, went down and scored, it would have been momentum in the Pacers' advantage. So it's these momentum-killing plays all the time. If you look at the Nets, I think the reason this is really, really bad loss is this team did not have... Now, the team has been better without Kyrie Irving, but, like, across the board, nobody on this team outside of, like, Jared Allen, 6 of 9, had a really awesome offensive night. I guess DeAndre Jordan probably did. He had 11 points and 19 rebounds, including 5 of 7 from the field. But, like, in terms of just, like, offensive output, nobody was, like, just killing it. It was a lot of just everybody scored double. Just, like, they had eight guys double figures and a lot of free throws for Dinwiddie to help Tim get his lead, push him to the 21 point. I mean, this is the game where the Pacers, you know, look at their lineup up and down. You would say, Sabonis had a good offensive night. Warren had a good offensive night. Turner had a good offensive night. McDermott did. Like, usually that's kind of a recipe to win, right? Usually they don't lose those games where the four of their top eight players, nine players, whatever you want to say, have good offensive nights. It was really weighed down because Malcolm Brogdon and Victor Oladipo sucked. I mean, I know we're giving Victor the benefit of the doubt, and I'm okay with that, but man, those two guys have not figured out how to play with each other. Brogdon has been just in an incredible slump over the past, really since Vic returned. I mean, this entire league has really been not on Brogdon, I don't think that's the right way to put it, but he has been just really bad. I mean, over the last 10 games, Malcolm Brogdon has shot 43% from the field, 28% from three-point, and 70% from the line for just 13 points and 6 assists. That compares to a season average of 16 points and 7 assists. And his season shooting percentage real fast is 43, 33, 90. So, I mean, we're talking a 21-point drop in free throws, a 4-point drop in three-point percentage, and actually on pace for his field goal. But I mean, compared to a career of 47, 39, 89, I mean, that's... I mean, he is way down in the dump. And I don't know if Vic or not. I mean, Vic sort of, I thought, turned a corner in the first half. He had a couple threes. He looked pretty good offensively. He was like 5 of 10 at one point. But at the end of the game, he was pretty shit. I'm sorry if it's kind of blunt to say, but he was pretty bad at the end of that game. And that's where I want to start. So the Pacer team went into the fourth quarter with a three-point lead and maintained it for pretty much the entire fourth quarter except for the last second. So let's pick up real quick. So I guess I want to pick up sort of, so I think Vic returned at the, let me do this real fast. He comes in at the 5:55 mark. The Pacers lead by 6. And then you have a couple of plays. You have Dinwiddie makes a step back 3. LeVert makes a step back 3. Dinwiddie makes a free throw. You got T.J. Warren misses the shot. Sabonis a foul. All this stuff. But then you have a nice play. So you have Oladipo makes a really, really nice assist to Sabonis with 4:28 left to take a 4-point lead. And it's like, at this point, to me, it feels like, and then, so the Nets go back down and score. But it feels like they're just trading baskets, right? And that's okay. If you don't have the lead, just continue to trade basket for basket, right? So then Victor Oladipo makes a 19-foot pull-up shot to go up by 4, and you're feeling, okay, Vic's got his shot. He looks pretty confident. Things are going well. And then they play some good defense. Joe Harris misses the shot. Sabonis rebounds. You're thinking, 4-point lead, 3 minutes left. Let's go add on to this. But then Vic misses a pretty, I wouldn't call it an easy layup, but it was one of those where he felt like he usually makes and he just badly missed it. I mean, I don't think he even hit the rim in that place. So Bonas rebounds it, Pacers get a timeout because Bonas is diving on the ground, which would come back to bite them in the back later, right? I mean, you're better off having that timeout, to be honest. And then Vic misses a 3, which was pretty bad. And then Vic gets the ball back and gets fat, and then Vic fouls Spencer Dinwiddie. So at this point, Dinwiddie makes both free throws at 97-95, but then Brogdon comes down and makes a jump shot. Pacers take a 4-point lead again. Still, we're trading basket for basket. Same thing again happens. DeAndre Jordan dunks the ball in, 99-97. Then Sabonis makes a 3-foot layup, thanks to a Brogdon assist. Then Dinwiddie goes to the line, makes both free throws. And then this is where things get, and then you come back around. Warren scores another basket. So now we're at 124-103-99. So 124 left, 103-99. And at this point, up 4 at the minute 30, you're thinking, you should win this game, right? Especially when what happens next, right? So Brogdon misses a floater with 101. But then Dinwiddie misses a jump shot with 54, Pacers then the Pacers give an offense. So at that point, when he misses that shot, it's like, get the rebound, boom, we should have, it should be 30 seconds if we're up by 4. I mean, you don't lose games like that very often, right? Then we're getting into a free throw battle, which is a little bit better, but no, they miss the offensive rebound, Jordan gets it, they get a timeout, Holiday comes in for Lamb, Joe Harris makes a layup, now it's a 2-point game, with 47 seconds left, and then you have Vic, who takes an early in the shot clock 3-point shot that just misses. Jordan rebound, go back down, Harris drained to 3, now the Pacers are losing. But things are not that bad, right? With 27 seconds left, Pacers down by 1, they have a shot, right? So this is where things get interesting, and I think it's one of the most frustrating plays I've seen and it really happened in the previous play too, but like, Sabonis has been the most dominant offensive player tonight. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. DeAndre Jordan cannot guard Sabonis. So when you go back to the previous play where he sets the screen for Oladipo and he jacks up this 3-point shot, essentially, it's like, why? Why was that not a keep better Sabonis, let him go to the rim and score? Because Sabonis, I mean, if Sabonis misses a layup, then we're talking about a whole different thing. But realistically, Sabonis has been hitting inside all day, all night. He's been amazing from down there. So why are we not giving him the ball? That's really on Vic and in coaching and that. So fast forward to 10 seconds to 27 seconds left, and the Pacers down by 1. And this is what happens, right? So Sabonis gets the ball, and everybody's scrambling left and right, and Sabonis is just kind of looking for somebody to pass, and I'm screaming at the TV, just go to the fucking rim, Sabonis. Excuse my language. But, like, for real, Sabonis, just go to the rim. It goes to the rim. DeAndre Jordan cannot guard him, and he scores with 10 seconds left. Fine. That makes sense. So they have the lead, right? So at this point, they're going to get a shot, or the Nets, but they're going to take the lead. At this point, I don't know who to blame, right? I'm not sure you bring in Miles Turner, but it didn't really seem to matter because Dinwiddie just basically got the ball, went right at Brogdon and drained a shot over him, so that didn't really matter. I would have kept Sabonis in simply because I don't like bringing guys cold. Turner hadn't played the entire fourth quarter. Why bring him in all of a sudden with 10 seconds left? That seems weird to me. Whatever happens, they get out of the timeout play with 3.8 left. They don't anticipate the foul, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they did, but they didn't really. They ran a really good play, right? They had a really good set for Oladipo, who clearly got, you know, to a spot he wanted to and made a nice shot. If you know, but he got fouled. I don't know if he should have been looking for the foul right away and pulled up. I mean, there's something there where I feel like as soon as Oliva gets that ball, he should have just pulled up. And if the guy fouled him, he fouled him. And then brought in, obviously, on the next play, he misses a three. You could argue he got hit in the arm. I'm here all day for that. But at the end of the day, they lost this game because they blew it. There was just execution after missed execution at the end of this game. You know, Oladipo continues to take too many shots at the end of games right now for not being as clutch as he is, not being the offensive player he is. And there needs to be some thought of, like, Sabonis needs to be the guy to get the ball to. I get he's setting the screens and all this stuff, but, like, Sabonis, when he has DeAndre Jordan as a matchup, should win that matchup every single time. He might not win it every time, but he's going to win it 70-80% of the time. And you saw it tonight, right? I mean, go back to the box score. I say it again. Sabonis was 11 of 15. 11 of 15. He's not going to – he beat DeAndre Jordan. What is the math equal there? Like, 70-something percent of the time, right? He also had 11 assists. So even if Sabonis gets all the way to the rim and they double team, he'll can kick to a driving T.J. Warren or Oladipo. Like, what made no sense to me was how Oladipo just kept pulling up, how Brody kept pulling up, and there was, like, this rush when it's like, just run a play through Sabonis and make a play. You know, Oladipo had made a beautiful pass to Sabonis earlier, like 2 minutes before that. Just do that play, right? Stop overthinking this. Stop taking too many jump shots. Stop taking inefficient shots and get to the fucking rim and score. That's all I have to think. That's all I have to say because, I mean, they get to the rim a couple more times, they win this game. You know, talk about bad rebounding, bad free throwing, bad three-point shooting, whatever. At the end of the day, if they just go to the rim instead of taking these pull-up jump shots, which they're inefficient shots, which are not going down for, and this guy have not gone down all season for Oladipo and have not been going down at any rate for Brogdon recently, stop taking those shots, go to the rim, find Sabonis, score a basket, win the goddamn game. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm being too simplistic and whatnot. Love to hear your guys' thoughts. You can tweet at Locked On Pacers, but man, it was just maddening to watch the fact of how many times the Pacers are going to take a jump shot in the last 3 minutes when they have Sabonis, who has been destroying DeAndre Jordan all fucking night. All right, let's take one quick break, and then I want to diagnose some of the problems I see with the Pacers in this six-game losing streak. Welcome back in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. So I don't know how long I'm going to go on this segment, but I'm just going to kind of riff on some of the problems I see with this Pacer team. And I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts at the end. Feel the tweet at me at FreeMadden5 or the podcast at Locked On Pacers. So the first thing I've noticed, and I kind of with this team, and it really goes to Victor Oladipo. I mean, you know, I know we're going to give him some slack because he is just returning and is kind of out of flow, but man, has he been bad. I mean, you know, what's weird about it is that he looks like Victor Oladipo, right? He runs the same pace. He doesn't seem like he's slow or, you know, lost a step and that's been an issue. What I feel like to me is that when he makes that step towards the rim, he's avoiding contact at times. Maybe that's a little bit of it. And then he's just taking a lot of jump shots. And the thing that always made Vic successful in the past was the fact that he wasn't just like a reliant jump shot shooter, right? He was efficient enough at it, right? So he, you know, what made him really good in, I'm going to go 2017-18, because he got a three-point percentage up to 37%. And I think at one point he's at 40. Like he got up to a point where it's like, this is respectable and really good. But what made him really good was that, you know, if you go to it, you look at his shot percentage of distance, right? He shot 69% inside 3 feet, right? So previous years for his career, 55, 57, 57, 60, and then 69%. This year he's 41% inside 3 feet, right? That was a thing. And like inside 10 feet, right, Vic shot, you know, and then he shot, an efficient enough rate from twos at 53% in total. Right now he's at 36% on two-point shots. Like, that's what made him such a good player. Now he took a lot more, you know, and he took a quarter of his shots from inside 3 feet at the same time. This year he's taking more like a fifth of his shots. Like, you combine the screwed up rate with his over competition with 3-point shots, and it just creates this weird balance, right? I think the thing before Vic all used to be is that you take a 3-point shot and it would like almost go in and come out and it would never look like a bad shot, right? You know, so he always thought, well, I'm not taking bad shots. They seem to, they're almost going in. But right now, they look like bad shots, right? He's not really hitting them off the glass right, and he's just not finishing around the rim. And when he can't finish around the rim, then he isn't successful. And that's the problem I see right now. Maybe he figures it out. Maybe he gets a little less gun-shy. But to be honest, a guy who had an injury like that where his knee literally fell apart on itself is going to be really gun-shy to get take contact. I mean, he's got to figure that out. If he can't figure out how to take contact, he's not going to be the same player. I mean, I don't mean to, you know, ruin everybody's moment, but if he can't finish around the rim the way he did, even at like maybe a 60, like, because right, even last season he wasn't as good as he was at, but he shot 60% around the rim, which was pretty good, which was good enough combined with his 34% from three. Like, it wasn't fantastic, but upon that with some good clutch play, he was still pretty good. And to the team he's with now, he probably can get away with that. But man, if he can't get to up to that rate, then he's not going to be this good. He's not going to be good enough to help this team win games. I mean, at some point, it's a discussion of, like, is he even worth the re-sign a year from now at a max deal? I mean, the player I'm watching now isn't worth anything. I mean, the player I'm watching now is barely worth more money than Jeremy Lamb, and that's simply because his history has proven he's worth a lot of money. But, and hopefully he'll get there. You know, I think I should caveat that, like, we'll play one more game, All-Star break, hopefully he'll get a lot of training in, figure it out, and watch his game. But, like, he's really got to figure out how to take contact around the rim, because that's the big issue. I mean, he's just not doing that. The second problem I've noticed, this one is focused on Malcolm Brogdon. He might just be in a slump. I mean, and that might just be it, because Brogdon is playing terrible. And you can make a very good case, you know, Brogdon's just having a really, really bad run right now, and he'll figure it out, and he'll right the ship and whatnot. But, man, I mean, I think we should kind of compare Brogdon's stretches, right? So, like, to start the year, Brogdon's kind of first 12 games before he missed his first stretch of games, right? He was at 19.2 points on 46-31%, 98 shooting, right? Pretty good run, right? I mean, that's a nice run. He was taking, I believe, let's do it real quick, almost 15 shots per game. He was, you know, had up to 8 assists. Like, he was pretty good. So let's take out that stretch. That is next kind of stretch. We'll take from this to the next time he got hurt, which was, so this would take you from late November to late December, right? This is a 14-game stretch where he was 17.6 points on 44-35 and 89.3% shooting with 7 assists. Again, slightly worse. Better shooting, slightly less points, better shooting percentage, slightly less assists, but still a really good player, putting up kind of the same plus, minus, stuff like that. Then he gets hurt with the concussion. What was this stretch? I'm trying to remember now. He's been hurt so many times, right? Was it the finger for three? It was the hip for three games and a concussion. No, the concussion was later on. So, and this was the hip injury, right? Or the back injury where he missed like 7 of 8 games. So then let's kind of take a stretch. So then you've got this weird disjointed stretch where he played a game and then didn't play a game. Comes back for like 5 games, gets hurt again with concussion. So in those 5 games, he's at 14 points per game on 40-39-88 shooting with 6.6 assists. So you're seeing this continual drop from the start, right? A really good start and just drop. And then now you take his last 8 games as he returned, 7 games he returned from the concussion, and looking at 14.3 points on 43-26, 69% shooting with only 6.7 assists. That's with Vic, obviously, in all 7 of those games. I don't know if we're just in a stretch where Brogdon is just beat up or whatnot. I mean, he is not the same player he was to start the year, let's put it this way. Not even the same player he was to return the first time from, I think it was a back injury the first time, and then it was a finger, then it was a back injury again, and then it was a concussion, right? If I'm doing all the injuries correct, in the correct order. He just isn't the same player. Now, hopefully we'll see, again, an All-Star break rest, and that will help him too. But it's concerning too to see that you kind of see the continual drop, right? You saw a guy who came out playing red hot and has kind of regressed back to what we call his mean, I guess. I mean, right? His, you know, he's never really been able to put up this many points per game. You know, his shooting percentages are just all out of whack. I mean, they look like nothing we've ever seen before from him. And part of that is the volume, right? I mean, he was making up for those high percentages with high usage rate and high assist rate, right? So like, you go to his usage rate real fast. You know, he was at 25% this year versus 20, 19, 18 the last three years. So that kind of explain the worst shooting percentage, which is fine if you add in, you know what I mean? If you add in usage rate, it's okay, right? You're looking at a guy who has his highest, last year was his most efficient year, but he's got his best, you know, combination, I think, of usage and points and assists kind of thing. So, like, but he needs this, I mean, it's been off. And maybe it's the injuries and constantly being in and out of the lineup, and maybe it's the chemistry and whatnot, but he's looked really bad. If you look at, like, his net rating over the last 7 games, it's a -9. That's terrible. I mean, really, for the Pacers, the only guys with positive net ratings outside of Jakar is here, but taking him out, he only played 2 games, is McDermott, McConnell, Sumner, and Justin Holiday. And until he got Sumner, too, because he only played 1 game, is really the 3 bench guys. Only guys with positive plus-minuses. But, I mean, this team, again, it starts with the top 2. Those guys feel out of whack. And then the next thing I'm noticing is Sabonis' lack of aggressiveness sometimes. And this, I pointed out in the first 7 minutes, I won't do it too much, but Sabonis is this team's best player right now. I mean, look at his last, 15 games? I mean, I think he's almost he's up to like 8 assists a game or something like that. You look at his last. So let's pull up his last real fast since the start of the year, because he had his first triple-double against Denver, I believe, in Denver in mid-December, but let's pull up the start of, since the start of the year, Sabonis has played 19 games, is averaging 19 points, 6 assists, 11 rebounds on 62% shooting and 73 of the line. I mean, that is the best player in the Pacers right now. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, if he puts up a stat line of 20, 11, and 7 for the rest of his, you know, neck. I mean, that's, he's going to be an all-star again. I mean, I know you might talk about he might be the worst all-star to make the team in a long time and whatnot, but if you just look at it, that kind of stat line is like, it's slightly below Jokic because he's not, Jokic is more like a 20-something, right? What is Jokic at this year, actually? He might actually be on pace with Jokic this year. But that's the kind of stat line that, like, it's basically like a slightly worse Jokic. But Jokic is at 20 points a game with actually 10 rebounds and 7 assists. So that literally is Jokic-level numbers. Now, there's no three-point shots, which is different. It's a little bit worse free throw line, but, like, better field goal percentage, same amount of shots, roughly, right? He's taking, well, 13 shots versus Jokic takes 15. But, so, yeah, I mean, that's a Jokic-level stat line right there. I didn't realize that, but that's what that is. Why is he not becoming the main offensive guy every possession, especially in a game where we just need to match points with points, right? That was all it was last game, match points with points. So I think he's played fantastic, Sabonis has. I mean, I think he's been put in some very weird situation where he has to play the bench at times and play starters and has to play a ton of minutes. I mean, he's played 37 minutes in the last 7 games. He has a ton of responsibility on him. But, man, why is he not your go-to player at the end of the game? Stop taking these jump shots, put the ball in Sabonis' hands, and let, you know, or set up a play to get, you know, set up pick and roll for Sabonis. Just something to get Sabonis towards the rim and let him score, because he's been the best player on this team for the past month, or month and a half now that we are in December, February. The last 6 weeks. That was a really bad brain fart. Okay, last thing I've noticed, and this is a weird one, is they have shoved Turner out of the rotation. So if you look at Turner, it feels like, now Turner's minutes over the last 7 games, let's pull him up, professor, are 29.2, which actually is on, I think it's on pace with what his season average is, if I'm actually being honest. I think his season average is some, maybe like 30. But if you look at, no, actually, his season average is 29, so he's playing his season average, but it feels like to me he's sort of been pushed a little bit out of playing, playing big clutch minutes, stuff like that. Now, he's had a terrible plus minus, but I don't like this whole, like, bring Turner in at 2 minutes mark, you know, cold off the bench. Like, I don't know. There needs to be some consistency. I get what they're going for. Play small, especially now that you have Vic back. You can really go, Warren, Lamb, Oladipo, Brogdon, Sabonis. It's a very good lineup. But at some point, like, you know, Turner's defense is important. I get offensively it might not work as well, but, I mean, I don't know. It feels like you're just sort of like teasing Turner and not getting him consistency, which is hurting his ability to be a good offensive player, right? He had a really good night tonight. He had 15 points. I believe he shot 2 of 6 from 3, which is a pretty solid night. Like, he can stretch the floor enough, in my opinion, right? He can do it enough where he could be out there and have some minutes, and then he protects the rim really well. He helps your rebounding at times because, you know, when he's pulled away, then Sabonis can clean up the glass versus Sabonis being pulled away from the rim and then can't clean up the glass. Like, I don't know. I think there's something with Turner needing to play more minutes and whatnot, especially because you decided you want to have him. Like, at this point, all you're doing is diminishing his value, hurting this guy's confidence. Like, and he's a good player. I mean, he's their best defensive player, and they're getting killed at the end of these games on the defensive end at times. So it seems like that might be worth playing. I don't know if any of these will be fixed and what's going to happen, but to me, it all comes back to there needs to be some consistency with lineups and rotations. And now that Oladipo is healthy, and when his minutes start to go up to about 27, 28, you'll have a consistent lineup, and I think you need to have these consistent things where guys play with the same players to get used to and find chemistry and find, you know, build these things, because this team looks like they're playing some bad because they're basically restarting their chemistry midseason, and everybody else has figured it out, and it's screwing everything up, right? It's just screwing up everything else, and you know, it'd be different if Vic was playing, like the Nets are a good example, right? The Nets are a team who's been without Kyrie whole year. When Kyrie comes back, he puts up 40 points, and it doesn't really matter what everybody else does because he does enough to win the game, but Vic comes back and can't do that, so then he's just throwing off everything and all this stuff, and it feels like this team is heading towards a 6th seed, and I'd be worried about a 7th seed if they can't turn this around, because they're probably going to lose their 7th game in a row, 8 of the last 9 against Milwaukee, assuming Giannis plays. I know he had a kid, so who knows about that. And then they will probably only have, what? So right now they've got 3.5 plus 2.5. They've got a 6-game lead. It might be a 5-game lead heading into the break, and they need to turn that around because that can go away really fast. Sorry to end on a depressing note. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. Me at FreedomAdam5. Love to hear your guys' thoughts on this Pacers losing streak. What do you guys think? Hope this team turns it around. Luckily, we're heading into an all-star break. So that'll be nice. Tony will preview tomorrow's podcast. We'll do tomorrow's podcast previewing the game against the Bucks. I will do a post-game after that game. Hopefully, I feel better. Sorry if I sound so congested, deep, whatever this is. I am very, very congested, but I don't have a fever, so I'm really not that sick. So, as always, this has been the Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys again.